Imagine hearing the gut-wrenching news that your child has cancer just before their third birthday.
I have to tell my families this all the time, that their child didn't get cancer because they were deficient in chemo.
This was the reality for Season Johnson. Season made it her mission to help her son not only survive, but thrive during his cancer journey.
It's not a deficiency in that, it's a deficiency in the immune system.
She poured herself into the research and started implementing natural detox and dietary protocols, which helped her son to avoid many of the harsh side effects associated with chemotherapy.
And they just lay out all these medications and antibiotics every week for 3.5 years. We decided to not do that and to keep his immune system healthy naturally.
In today's episode of Grounded Wellness, Season shares her journey and offers valuable insights on how to navigate an unexpected pediatric cancer diagnosis with hope and strength. Let's dig in. Season, I can't believe that you're here in the flesh. I mean, we've known each other and been friends for like over a decade, probably.
It's a long time.
And have only seen each other in person a handful of times. So it's such a treat to have you here today. Thanks.
Thank you. It's so fun to be here. I was telling you when I got here, like, I think, it's been 10 years since I've been near or on the old farm.
Yeah.
When we came to visit, and it's so cool to see.
Yeah, you've been a part of like the Primal Pastures and Family Pure journey, like literally since the beginning.
Yeah. It's been fun to watch it evolve and grow and see all the things you're doing, and getting attacked by a goose on my way in. That was actually so fun.
You handled it like a champ.
It was awesome.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry about that.
No, it was so great. It was grew up on a farm, so it was nothing strange at all.
You're the best person for it to happen to.
Yeah.
Could have gone sideways with some other guests, but you can handle that stuff. Okay. So I'm just going to dive in with like a big question for you. Is cancer a chemotherapy deficiency?
No, it's not. And I have to tell my families this all the time, that, you know, their child didn't get cancer because they were deficient in chemo or radiation or surgery or a medication. God didn't create us with this like, oops, forgot about that. And, you know, while all of those methods can help, it's not a deficiency in that. It's a deficiency in the immune system.
And just for anyone who isn't familiar with your background or like why and how you are so qualified to speak on this subject, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your son's journey with cancer?
Yeah. So my son's 14. So when he was born, I went back to school to become a functional nutritional therapy practitioner, which is, I think, right around when we first probably connected at different conferences.
Yeah.
And I had a private practice. And ironically, I would not see cancer. That just felt really scary and unknown and unfamiliar.
You wouldn't see patients that had cancer.
I wouldn't see patients, exactly. So I would help people with everything from digestion to fertility, weight loss, detox, things like that. But just if somebody called me and said, you know, I have cancer, I was so intimidated and I just wouldn't see them. I'd refer them out. And so come November, it was Thanksgiving, and my son, he was almost two at this point, he was two. He just wasn't feeling well. And so as a practitioner, I'm putting him on all the protocols. I'm doing GAPS diet. I'm like, have him on supplements. I'm just trying to figure out, why are you so inconsistently not feeling well? And he was such a healthy baby, never, you know, didn't receive any vaccines. And he went from breast milk to bone broth. And so it was just so frustrating to try to get to the root cause of this. And finally on Thanksgiving, he stopped walking. And that's when I just knew like something is wrong inside.
And he was bedridden, couldn't walk.
We would like have to carry him.
Wow.
And so that was about a day and a half. And I finally said, I think we need to come down to LA and see our family osteopath.
Because we were living in Northern California.
At this point, we were actually in Mammoth Lakes.
Okay.
So it wasn't too far from LA. So we brought him down. And I actually called my mentor, Kim Schutte. And I just, as soon as she picked up the phone, I broke down. It was like I knew intuitively something was really wrong. And she just tried to comfort me. And she's like, no, I'm sure it's not anything really bad, but take him down to see Dr. Moreno. I did. Little did I know, as soon as Dr. Moreno, you've met him.
I haven't.
You haven't.
I've heard a lot about him, but I haven't met him.
He's an amazing healer. Oh my gosh. He's an osteopath, craniosacral osteopath.
We have an osteopath too in Arizona that we see. So
it's
full
huge.
Believer in that.
Structure affects function affects structure. He's just so gifted. And I guess he told me this after, But just putting his hands on Kicker, he knew that he had leukemia.
Wow.
And he didn't tell me that. You know, we needed to go, and he just said, I want you to go to the ER at Loma Linda. And so we drove to the ER at Loma Linda, checked in, and next thing we knew, we were being transferred to the oncology floor. My husband didn't know what that meant. I did. And so we take him up, and it took about 2 days to get an official diagnosis of acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And I didn't realize, so we go into this conference room. The oncologist, who, by the way, was on the spectrum, he couldn't make eye contact. So in two ways, it's beautiful that, like, this brilliant man is helping kids with cancer, but it was really hard as a parent to have a physician that he had this gift of intelligence, but not any personal skills, you know. But they tell us, you know, your son has leukemia. Here's our protocol. And mind you, he hadn't even had Tylenol. Like, we had not had given him anything synthetic at this point. Like, and they just lay out all these medications. It's going to be 3.5 years, antibiotics every week for 3.5 years.
Why antibiotics for leukemia?
So it's pretty standard for almost all pediatric cancer. They do it as a preventative. So they're using antibiotics to prevent what I consider kind of more of a fungal parasitic issue that can develop in the lungs from the suppressed immune system and the toxicity of the chemo. So because this is something that can happen, instead of let's support their immune system, let's actually help it fire off and get rid of fungus and bacteria, they use antibiotics as a preventative, which you're watching these kids, their immune system is wiped, their gut is destroyed, and they have all of these side effects and symptoms. And then in times they become antibiotic resistant.
Yeah.
So if they really need it, it's not going to work.
So they recommended antibiotics for the entire duration of the treatment?
Yep. For 3.5 years, every weekend, he would take a dose Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Now, we made the choice to not do that. We had support. We had a whole functional team that I wish I could say was working alongside our oncologists, but I'm sure we'll talk more about that disconnect there. But we had this amazing team that was guiding us. And just was giving us alternatives to support his immune system to try to prevent that fungus developing, right? And to keep his immune system healthy naturally.
Without just taking constant antibiotics
yeah.
the whole time.
And
did you tell your oncologist that you were also doing these things?
No, we actually went to the extent of filling every single prescription because we didn't want to risk not getting in trouble, really.
Right. I imagine that would be met with a lot of resistance.
Yes. A lot of pushback. And actually, and we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, but now working with families, it's not something as I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't tell people not to take a prescription, right? But we do encourage our families to talk to their oncologist about alternatives. And we have had, believe it or not, I would say the majority are just think it's insane. Absolutely take the antibiotics. I would, you know, don't go off of them. But we've had a handful of doctors recognizing how well these kids are doing through treatment when the parent admits they're not giving it to them.
And is that even like legal? Like, is that dangerous to admit that to the oncologist?
It can be.
With that?
Yeah, CPS will be called most likely. We've had that happen with some of our families. CPS will show up at their door, start questioning if the doctor chooses to report them.
Wow.
And, you know, when we were first diagnosed, kind of going back to that day and we're given this protocol, I thought at that point we left that room just shaken, went into our hospital room with our son and immediately got on a phone call with this functional team that they were colleagues of mine, mentors of mine.
Yeah.
And we were prepared for them to present us their protocol. Like, okay, so you got this protocol. Here's what we would do and choose. And they were kind of beating around the bush. They wouldn't share with us specific things. And I finally said, what's going on? What is your protocol? And they said, you know, Susan, you're in the system. You can't leave. And that's when we realized that if you're under the age of 18 in the United States, in Canada, and actually some other countries as well, your child, if they're diagnosed with cancer, you are required by law to do chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery.
Wow. I feel like I've heard stories about this in
yeah.
the news of parents that choose not to go that route, and then their child is actually taken from them.
Yep. Child becomes property of the state. Parents could be subject to being arrested. And, you know, it's one of those things as a parent, you always say, like, well, my kids will never, until you have kids. And you're like, okay, I said they'd never be on a screen. You're like, here's your iPad. But I get a lot, like, parents will say out of just ignorance, like, well, if my kid got cancer, we'd just go to Mexico or we'd just go to Germany. It's easier said than done because, first of all, I didn't expect my kid to be diagnosed with cancer when I took him in.
Right. You see them, they have these symptoms, and you take them in, and that's like the last thing that you would expect.
Yes.
But then you get the diagnosis, and you're essentially stuck.
And that's to get an official diagnosis. I mean, yes, of course, there's alternative testing they do with adults, but usually, I mean, it's through a hospital setting. And so at that point, you're stuck. And you know, I am so confident that we did the right thing, right? That we walked through this, and more so now looking back and going, we learned how many things we could do alongside the chemo, the surgery, the radiation, the required antibiotics, all the different things we could do to keep him healthy through that, and now be a testament to all the families that we support.
Do you think that he could have healed just as well or even better without the chemotherapy and just going the natural route? Or do you think that the chemo actually did help him in some way?
So leukemia has actually, there's been so many different studies done from the functional world as well, that leukemia responds really well to chemotherapy. And there's enough of even my colleagues in the space of alternative medicine and natural cancer therapies that we do agree that chemo can play a role with leukemia. Now, does it need to be done the way it's done? No. Like, we're literally given, okay, this is your child's age, this is their weight, this is their diagnosis, here's your protocol. So my son, who was other than cancer, a really healthy child, never on any other medication, is given the same exact protocol as a child that comes in with diabetes and, you know, sepsis and all these other issues going on. They're on the same protocol, just changed by weight.
Just like a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yep. And because we didn't give the antibiotics, his immune system really thrived through treatment. So he was never hospitalized outside of scheduled chemotherapy, not once.
What side effects did he experience from the
chemo? So he lost his hair. And that was pretty heartbreaking because it makes it real, mm-hmm. right? You're like, wow, this is, my kid is that kid, the bald kid from the St. Jude commercials, you know?
It was brief though, right? It wasn't
very brief.
Okay.
In fact, we might've pulled the trigger a little fast with shaving it, but it was just heartbreaking to think of watching it fall out. Mm-hmm. And so we shaved it, and I swear, like, the next day it was like, think, like, hair just started growing back.
And because you were doing so much to support his body.
Yeah.
While he was undergoing the treatment.
They're losing hair because the chemo is meant to literally bring you almost to death. Like, it kills everything.
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to support the body to keep it healthy through treatment. So that, and then the only other side effect that I would say there was two, just kind of mood swings from steroids.
Hmm.
Steroid pulses are another part of treatment. And they just, like, we'd call it a roid rage. Our little 4-year-old is like, doesn't know why he feels the way he feels, and he just gets angry and frustrated. And then there was a point that they increased his chemo. So because we didn't do the antibiotics, because his immune system was doing so well, they increased his chemo to 600% the normal dose. They just kept upping it. His immune system isn't dropping. His ANC, absolute neutrophil count, it's not dropping. So we're going to just, that means that
but
in there.
But were the cancer cells dropping?
Yeah, they do bone marrow biopsies to show, but they only know one way to treat medicine, right? Or to treat cancer. And it's, we watch kids come in and they're tanked. They're gray. Like, literally their skin is gray. They're bald. They're vomiting.
Yeah, I can imagine what you're describing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the standard. That's the standard of care.
So they want kids to get to that point.
Yes.
And if they're not, if they don't look gaunt and terrible, they're like, okay, we need to increase the dose.
Yeah, because they don't think it's working. It
even
must
if
not
the cancer cells are dropping.
Yeah, even if the, you know, his platelets are good. You look at, there's certain markers you look on just weekly blood work that would indicate if cancer was back, and none of those were ever present. But his immune system was doing too well. And so because they got him up to this incredibly high dose, I remember one night he was not feeling well. And I mean, he didn't vomit through treatment. Like, he truly thrived, except for this night he threw up and it burnt a hole in my pillow. It was like this fluorescent color, and it literally, there was a hole in the pillow. I mean, it was like toxic. Like, it was crazy. So that was really the only time that I recognized, like, wow, this could really be destructive.
Did you know at that point that they were increasing the dose so dramatically?
We did. And I mean, your hands are kind of tied.
There's nothing you could do.
No. And you just, and we just upped the detox. We upped his nutrition, you know, just all of the healing modalities that we were learning and that we were implementing. We just kind of 10x'd it. But yeah, it felt a little bit out of control. Like, oh my gosh, I don't know how, I'm like, my hands are tied.
And what were all of those things that you were doing to support his body naturally alongside the chemotherapy?
Yeah. So we had him on a really intentional, I don't like to say strict, because there was plenty of time to let him be a little boy and go to a birthday party. We'd always bring his healthy treat to enjoy. But he was on a really intentional diet. And so it was kind of a Weston Price type diet. Lots of healthy fats, lots of protein, fresh organic veggies, not a lot of grains. Of course, not sugar. Once in a while, we'd make like homemade gummy candies with raw honey.
And what are, for anyone who isn't familiar, what does sugar do to cancer in the body?
Yeah. So healthy cells have the metabolic flexibility to use both sugar and fat as a fuel source. Cancer cells can only use sugar as a fuel source. So essentially, if you can remove sugar from the diet, you can effectively starve a cancer cell. But if you continue eating sugar, you're feeding the cancer. Now, I will say that research in the last decade has shown there's now cancers that are super tricky and they can use both as fuel. Mm. And so that's where you just have to come in with all angles, right? There's not a, I wouldn't say there's a one size fits all even diet for every single person with cancer. But when we're looking at kids, we look at the metabolic approach. So how can we support their terrain with healthy fats, protein, carbohydrates coming from only fruits and vegetables, fermented foods, right, to feed the bacteria in their gut? So we fed them really intentionally. We did a lot of detox. So we would do castor oil packs, detox baths, homeopathic drainage remedies, homeopathy.
What does that mean?
So homeopathy is one of my favorite tools that we use with our families because it's essentially like you can't screw it up. You can't overdose. You can't ruin anything. It will not affect the medicine. It's not going to reduce the efficacy of what they're getting from the doctor. But it goes into the tissue and essentially can drain the organs and tissue of toxins really gently.
And these are like the little tablets.
Tablets, liquid. There's okay. Different gemotherapies that are usually liquid. And then there's the pellets, there's tablets, and they're easy to get into your kids. Cause you've seen like Arnica, right?
Yeah.
The little beadlets, they're like sugar pellets.
Yeah.
So it's such a gentle way to support kids.
My kids love taking them. Actually,
yes.
They'll ask for them. We're like,
right.
No,
yeah.
You don't need anything right now.
Like candy.
Yeah.
So yeah, homeop, a lot of that. We had them on some specific supplements that our functional team had put them on. A lot of organ meats, bone marrow. If you think about like leukemia, you know, well, part of the chemotherapy, it suppresses the bone marrow production, suppresses red blood cell production, suppresses platelets. So in order to keep all of that functioning, we give them exactly what they need, which is bone marrow from grass-fed animals. We teach families how to like, you roast them, scoop it in, mix it in with any dish. We have moms in our group that will mix it in French toast.
Wow. I need to try the bone marrow. I'm fairly familiar with like incorporating organ meats into our foods, but bone marrow is something that I haven't done yet.
Yeah. And I don't love the taste. Like it's not,
really?
My kids will eat it out of the bone at a restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't love it, but mixing it in, you can't taste it.
Yeah.
It's actually really, into a savory dish.
How did you incorporate the other organ meats into his diet?
We had bought a quarter of a cow. Right. And so we just asked for the liver, the kidneys, the heart, and asked the butcher to mix it in with all the ground beef.
Nice.
And, you know, ground beef is so much more affordable to cook with when you're trying to get really good quality meat. And
yeah.
So we just said, can you put all of the organ meats mixed into our ground beef? And most of the cow, we had it turned into ground beef.
Yeah. That's a good way to go.
Yeah, it's less expensive. You can do organ meat supplements, of course.
Yeah.
But kids don't love swallowing pills.
No. But Kicker did learn to swallow pills at a young age. How did you manage to do that?
That was God. I don't know how that happened. He was not even, no, I think he maybe had just turned 3. And he just surprised us one day. Like we were breaking open like 20 capsules a day and trying to mix it in. And then he'd get mad because his applesauce was now like green and tasted like algae, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, what is this? And I said, buddy, if you can swallow pills, you can eat your applesauce plain. You know, it would be so helpful. And I do remember putting a pill at the end of his straw. Somebody had told me this, and put it in the water and had him just suck it back. That's what they do in the hospital. They teach you, but they teach you with Tic Tacs or candy, right? So I'm like, well, we'll try it with a little pill. And he did it. And I think that just gave him confidence. And we kept, it was a big deal. We encouraged him. And yeah, that made my life so much easier.
I've seen this other trick, and maybe it was you who posted about this, but something with like, you have them jump off of something while they, maybe it wasn't you then, but like you give them the supplement and then they like jump, they like put it in their mouth and like swallow it as they're like jumping off the coffee table.
Oh my gosh.
Have you ever seen that?
It almost sounds like it could go really well or really poorly.
Oh, Dad, I know.
I haven't seen that. But I think like, you know, the whole head tilt, my husband still has to do that. I could give him a pill and he's like jumping on one leg and throwing his head back.
I can swallow like 5 at a time now.
Same.
Like just down.
Yes, I know.
A big gulp of water.
We always joke that our kids and yours same, especially with homeopathic remedies, they all are alcohol based. So they taste a little alcohol-y. So we joke that like our kids are going to be at the bar at 21, like taking shots like it's no big deal because they've done it their whole
life. Yeah.
I'm a little scared.
Did you ever do liver smoothies with them?
I did. But here's a mistake I made. And I think I forever scarred my husband. So my kids never really figured it out until my husband made it a deal because I didn't blend the liver really well.
Oh, no.
So
they get chunks of it?
Yes, he did. Josh did.
Oh, that's horrible.
And it was a big chunk. And he chewed it.
Mm.
And he's like, what is in my smoothie? And he's like, he thought it was a banana.
That's happened to me. It's terrible.
You need a good blender.
Yeah.
But we did. We did liver smoothies.
What did you mix it with?
Berries, bananas. I would do raw milk.
Yeah.
Kicker actually didn't do really great on raw milk, but he downed raw kefir. In fact, he craved raw kefir. Like his body knew he needed it. He would walk into chemo with a quart of Papa Mark's kefir. And he would walk in and it was crazy. His body loved it. So we'd add kefir.
Okay, I want you to try my smoothie and see if you approve.
Excited about this.
Because it's basically what you just described, but it doesn't have banana. But it's raw milk, raw liver, chicken liver.
Okay.
So it's like a little bit more mild.
Yeah, I was going to say that is, he would have probably done better with the raw chicken.
And then there's honey and there's mint leaves in here. The mint leaves help a lot to mask the liver.
Oh, interesting.
Hopefully
okay.
I blended it well enough this morning.
That's really good. You can't taste liver at all.
Yeah. So I tried it just to see, like before I added the honey and the mint.
Yeah.
You could totally taste it. And then when I added the honey and mint, it just like, it like cancels it out.
And I would have never thought mint.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
I need to do those again. In fact, I
go in spurts of it.
Yeah.
Like once you get in the habit and once you have the liver there, because I like puree it and then I pour it into silicone molds and freeze them and then just like have glass Tupperware containers full of these little like cubes.
Yeah.
In the freezer. And when they're there, I'll always like, it's easy to plop a few into a smoothie, but it's like going through the process of making them.
Do you, when you do your liver, and I'm guessing it's different for chicken and beef, because we've only really used beef. When you get it, you freeze it first or do you cook it and then puree it?
I don't cook it.
Yeah.
So it comes frozen, like,
right.
'Cause I get it from here, from Primal Pastures. And then I just defrost it in the fridge for like 24 hours.
Okay.
But it's never cooked.
You never, okay. Yeah. That's what we do. Because when you cook it, you'll totally taste it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, putting it into the ground beef is another great option. And especially if you're like then using the ground beef in a recipe that has like, that has spices or sauces, it like completely masks it.
You know, and another thing that we've encouraged our families, there's a new brand you should have them on your podcast if you haven't yet, but Pluck.
I don't know if I've
heard
of that.
So Pluck is an organ
meat.
Oh,
the spices.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a seasoning.
I've heard of that.
That is all organ. It's totally clean. It's delicious.
Really cool.
You could put it on popcorn, we put it on eggs every morning.
That's genius.
It's wonderful. Yeah. So that's another way to get organ meats in.
Yeah.
With, you know, because again, a lot of kids are picky. They're inherently picky. Plus you put them on chemo. It changes their taste buds completely.
Wow.
They just want kids will either go to salt or sugar.
Mm.
Kicker hated sweet during chemo and during steroids.
That's good.
It was helpful. But like he wouldn't even want fruit sometimes. But he craved salt.
Okay.
So you kind of have to mess with like, what are they wanting? How can we make a healthy version? But the Pluck seasoning's awesome.
Going back to detox, what else did you do to support his detox pathways throughout the cancer journey? Because I know with kids, it's like tricky. You don't want to do, you don't want to go overboard.
Yeah.
But I'm sure in Kicker's case, like you had to do a lot of different things. So what did that look like?
Yeah, you're right. It is important to mention that. Like when somebody, whether it's an adult or a child, but really a child, when they're going through active treatment, I mean, you just, the amount of toxins being put in their body, all while helping, you know, we were just, even if, I always tell parents as a side note, like, even if you are just so angry that they're having to get the toxins in their body, like you have to truly work on believing that it's playing a role, right? Like just that power of belief. So while they're going through this and they're just getting filled with all the toxic chemicals, you have to be gentle with how much you detox, because to your point, it could either make them feel horrible and it can push out the medicine that we do need to play a role, right? And so we do take a really gentle approach through active treatment. After treatment's over, a lot of times people are like, we're done, we're moving back into normal life. And that's actually where healing has to go in, like 10x. But during treatment, you know, a couple of things we always say is they have to have a bowel movement every day. It's so important because we know that's how toxins are pushed out. And so if a child isn't, that's a sign their detox pathways aren't open. And so there's a lot of different remedies. One of them is we'll make sure that they're doing a castor oil pack over their belly, using some essential oils like fennel or licorice, like different essential oils that can actually help the bowels move. Doing fermented.
Did you ever try putting like spraying magnesium on?
No, but some of my families are doing that now.
Yeah.
Has that worked for your kids at all?
I actually haven't tried it on my kids. I should. But one of my friends, so we have a product called Cycle Soothing Oil, and it's like a magnesium spray with a blend of essential oils to support hormones to use, like, to help with menstrual cramps.
Is this new? I did not know about this.
It's fairly new.
Oh my gosh.
It's like
amazing.
In the last year.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's amazing for supporting menstrual cramps. But I have a friend who like struggles with constipation, and she told me that she uses it for that. And so one time I tried it, and it works like a charm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Yes, it totally makes sense. Yeah. And that would be like, again, so gentle.
Mm-hmm.
We try to like first do things like that topically before we try to force them to take another pill.
Yeah.
So magnesium is huge. And actually, chemotherapy severely depletes the body of magnesium.
Mm.
And I think the latest study I read was like 98% of Americans are actually already deficient in magnesium. Then you put them through something like chemotherapy, and every organ in your body is dependent on magnesium, every system. And so it would make sense that that would be one of the reasons a lot of our kids have constipation. So yeah, magnesium, anything topical, fermented foods. We always say add a little bit of sauerkraut juice to maybe bone broth.
Hmm.
Or if you can get it into a smoothie without it being like really flavorful, fermented foods, but trying to do whatever we can to get the bowels moving and activated. And then we always make sure, like, hydration. It's basic, but you see it. A lot of kids are just drinking fruit juice and pop and they're not drinking water with electrolytes.
Yeah.
Even salt, you know, we just say put some real good quality salt in your kid's water. Make sure they're hydrated.
Do you use Keton at all?
Yes. That was one of the supplements he was on. Still, our family takes it every day.
Yeah, same.
I love that.
I love it.
And you don't really need another electrolyte.
Yeah.
I think it's really good. And I think that is actually really helpful also for just regulating bowels, hydration.
And Keton, for anyone who hasn't heard of it, it's a seawater. It's like a saltwater solution. But it's different than like regular salt water. Like, how would
you describe
it?
Yeah, it's not the ocean. So it's from the plankton beds of the sea. It's, of course, purified, but it literally tastes like you're drinking. You just took a gulp of the ocean.
Yeah.
But it mimics your blood. So
right.
It's like so nourishing to every cell in your body and just incredibly hydrating.
You really feel a difference after
you do. Yeah. And you can tell, we always say if you're dehydrated, it won't taste like salt.
Oh, I've never experienced that.
So if you ever are dehydrated and you take it and you're like, wow, that didn't really taste like salt water. It just tasted like water. It means you're dehydrated. And I usually say take another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's huge. That's so helpful.
Yeah.
In fact, you can, another way to detox, and this is a big part that with kids, there's so many things. And by the way, everything that we're talking about, kids that don't have cancer, like parents that are like, I want to do whatever I can to create an environment cancer can't survive in our family. All of these remedies are so safe for that. And one of our favorite detoxes, which helps with cold and flu season, is nebulizing. So you can nebulize the quinton minerals. You can nebulize saline. You can nebulize redox molecules, like ASEA is a company. And just letting them, like, that's when my kids got to play a video game. They'd have their little Nintendo whatever and just nebulize for 30 minutes. And it's keeping your lungs are a detox organ, right? It's keeping your lungs clear. So pathogens, bacteria, it's a wonderful way to support detox. And it's simple.
Yeah. I think I was actually communicating with you on this when we got a nebulizer. I think like you had recommended where to get it. And we did it for a little while. It's something I need to get back into it. But I feel like it was so inconvenient because, and maybe this isn't necessary, but I was cleaning it like after every session, like all the tubes and the mask, and like then I would let it sit on the counter to dry. And it was just like, I feel like it was just constant like cleaning and drying, and like the nebulizer was always there. And it was like, is that necessary?
No, I wouldn't. I would say you could clean it like just the mask when you're moving it to the next kid. You don't need to clean out
and
the tubes every time.
If everyone has their own mask, then do you even...
No.
Okay.
I would say, you know...
I was making it too complicated.
You probably were. Yeah, I think you don't have... In the tubing, I would just say making sure it doesn't get musty.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I rarely clean it out. I just make sure it sits out. We dump it out. I rinse out the little cup, and then I'll rinse out the mask, and that's really it.
Okay.
So yeah, it doesn't need to be... You don't have to get that
crazy about it. Okay, I'll give it another go.
Yeah, and it's simple. And there's something about the noise. Like, some kids are super sensitive, so that's a little trickier. But it's kind of relaxing.
Yeah.
As well.
No, I would do. I would let my kids like watch TV while they did it, so they were excited because that's like they don't get to watch a ton
it's
of
screen
TV,
time.
So yeah.
The other detox modality we love for kids is jumping on trampoline.
Yeah.
You know, rebounding is the term that we use, but I always tell parents, don't go out and buy a rebounder. If you have a trampoline, just get your kid or you. I can't jump on a trampoline. I can jump on a rebounder, but trampoline, I want to pee instantly.
Yeah.
A rebounder, I'm fine.
Every month. It's every month.
Yes. I can't jump on a trampoline. But yeah, getting them jumping. Jump rope, jumping on a trampoline. It's stimulating their lymph, which is their blood detox system.
These are all just things that I feel like you can like find ways to make it fun for kids.
Yes. Yeah. All of it.
Yeah.
And bribery. I'm not above bribery. Like bribing, hey, if you do, and what we teach families, and again, for not just cancer families, but almost having like a, I was never the chore chart mom. I wish I always wanted to be. I think I bought them, never used them. But if you had just something that they could, you give them a little autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
So here are the five things. Here's the nebulizer. Here's a castor oil pack, a detox bath. Here's jumping on a trampoline. And, you know, if you want to throw something else in there, like sitting in a sauna, if you have a sauna.
Mm-hmm. And what would you do for kids? Like 15 minutes?
I always say low and slow.
Yeah.
So I'd start like 10 minutes, lower temp, depending on your sauna. And after about 30 minutes, if they're not sweating, I'd pull them out. And it means their detox system isn't probably working well. So go back to hydration, bowel movements, and then kind of making sure you're slowly working them up to being able to get back in and start sweating.
Yeah.
But if you give your kids like five choices and they have it like, okay, every day you guys get to choose one thing you get to do and they choose what they do. I mean, imagine how much healthier our kids would be.
Totally. I reward my kids for doing that kind of stuff. And I've never been a chore chart person either, but my daughter, my oldest, actually like wanted a chore chart. So I was like, okay, like
she's
make
a checklist
your, like,
girl.
Create a chore chart. Like just write it down, whatever you think it should look like. And so she like proposed like these different chores and what she thought she should be paid for each one.
Oh my gosh.
It was actually pretty reasonable, but it was so funny because she included standard things like making the bed, unloading the dishwasher, and then one category was, it was biohacking. Like she actually wrote biohacking. And it was like sauna, hyperbaric chamber, going for a walk. And I was like, I mean,
wow.
Sure. Like we can do this. And now she like, and I'd pay her for these things. Not, I mean, it's very little, but it's still enough to like motivate her to do them. So I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's
and building
fine with
the
that.
Habits. Like you're building these habits in her, and there is something too about like giving our kids kind of that of autonomy, but they're developing habits that they won't let go of.
Yeah.
You know, I always say, I'm sure when my kids move out, they'll kind of stray into some things like, oh, I'm going to go to In-N-Out a little bit more often, or I don't know, something like that. And but they know how good they feel when they don't.
Right.
So exactly. Just building that foundation is huge.
Yeah. So Kicker is now, he's 14. So he has been doing great and he's super healthy now. What did the rest of the cancer journey look like for you guys?
So he was diagnosed December 4th, 2013. And at that point in time, boys that were diagnosed with leukemia had to go through 3.5 years of treatment. So 3.5 years of daily chemo. Now they've changed it and they've cut a year off, which I'm like, okay, awesome.
So it's just the standard amount of time, regardless of like when the cancer is gone or anything.
Yep. And here's the worst part. So the first 6 months of treatment are kind of the induction phase where it's really harsh. It's heavy amounts of chemo and it's just really like touch and go for most kids. Again, Kicker just did so well. After those first 6 months, then they go into what we call maintenance. But here's what's so bizarre, and I don't know actually if they're actively doing the same system now. They literally put his number, not his name, but his number that he's recognized by the Children's Oncology Group, basically in a hat, for lack of a better example. And as you walk into maintenance, you basically just draw a number. And if the number you draw will determine whether he gets a spinal injection of chemo and into his port every month or every 3 months.
What?
So it has nothing to do with his numbers, with his immune system, with his genetics.
Luck of the draw.
It is luck of the draw. And I have a picture still of him. We were in that room, like just covering him in prayer, covering the room in prayer. Like, God, please give us the least aggressive. And I have this sweet picture of him just like praying. And we did. We got the least aggressive. So it was every 3 months we'd do that. He had to do chemo every day by mouth, but the port and spine was every 3 months. And so that was just the rest of treatment for 3.5 years. And then you're done. And this is kind of the sad part, again, about this journey is you're done. They ring the bell. They take their port out. And that's where they put the chemo through. And they kind of just send you on your way. And they say, come back and do labs every 6 months. But there's no direction on, okay, hey, now we really need to focus on creating an environment cancer can't come back in. The number one side effect of most chemotherapies is secondary cancer. And like you said in the very beginning, he didn't get cancer because he needed chemo. He got cancer because something in his terrain broke or needed support.
Looking back, is there anything that you can think of like, that's what it could have been?
Yep.
Or, I mean, because I know you guys raised him so well and you guys were already so into health and ancestral living. Like, what is there anything that you attribute it to now?
Yeah, there's a few things. And, you know, I always tell parents, like, it's such a delicate journey because as a mom, when your kid's homesick from school, you feel guilty and you're like, all you want to do is make them better. When your kid gets diagnosed with cancer, it is this like intense, heavy guilt. Especially when they're that little, like, what did I do wrong? And you take that responsibility so heavily on your shoulders. And so I'm always so gentle when I talk about like thinking back to what were some of the things that contributed. While we may never know the one thing, because I don't think there was one thing, knowledge is power. And so while I could say for our situation, a couple things, now that I know his genetics, we did a 3x4 and we do this with all our families that we work with. We have them do a 3x4 genetic profile to know their epigenetics, to see if they have any methylation pathways broken or genetic SNPs that are something's not working, right? So looking now at his genetics, there was a few things that played into it, I believe. I had to have an emergency appendectomy when I was 14 weeks pregnant with him. So I went under anesthesia. I'm sure they gave me antibiotics and they said, you don't have a choice. You either lose the baby or you could die. We have to do this. So that was, I think, trigger one. Number two, I had a C-section, another bout of anesthesia, antibiotics. When he was conceived, my husband was a California Highway Patrol officer. We were living in Marina Del Rey in these apartment buildings that had like 100 Wi-Fi signals, and then moved to Irvine when he was born. And I lived in another high-rise apartment building. And I remember like pulling up, this is when Wi-Fi was still kind of like, you know, not new, but I remember pulling up my phone or my computer and being like, wow, there's like 30 Wi-Fi networks. And we know there's a direct correlation with leukemia and electromagnetic frequencies and radio frequencies. And then the final thing is leukemia has an inherent emotion connected to it of not feeling worthy. And while he was two, I don't think that was him. I think it could have been an inherited emotion, whether it was from myself, my husband, generationally. Mm-hmm. It could have been great-grandma. And that's where emotions come in and like just really working through unhealed traumas, unhealed emotions, because our kids can receive those too if they're not healed at the core. And doing work like we recommend, it's something, have you heard of emotion code?
Yes.
Okay, so it's so simple. Get the book on Amazon. It teaches you how to do it. You can find a practitioner to do it. But I would say those were kind of the main factors that I believe played into it.
Yeah. So interesting. And what surprised you and shocked you the most about the conventional oncology world when you guys were in that? I mean, you've mentioned a few things already, but I know there's even more, I think.
Yeah. So when we first were diagnosed and we were diagnosed at Loma Linda, you know, at this point, I was still a little naive and I kind of thought that there would be a different protocol based on the doctor or the hospital. And I had a boss who was very well recognized in the entertainment industry. And I had reached out to him and I said, do you have any connections to the Children's Hospital Los Angeles oncology team? Because he was a big donor. He said, yeah, let me actually get you a meeting with the head of pediatric oncology, the head doctor. So my husband and I went there. We had so much hope and so much expectation, thinking like, okay, we've heard this protocol from Loma Linda. And now we're going to CHLA. We're meeting with the head guy. He's probably going to give us this customized protocol for Kicker. We sit down in his office and, you know, it's covered with all these celebrities and all his awards. And he said, how can I help you? And I said, well, this is the situation, my son, this is what we're doing. I would like to know, how would you customize a protocol for him? And I said, my biggest concern is there's no attention to nutrition through this. And he laughed. He literally laughed, not just a chuckle. He started laughing and he said, oh my gosh, do not pay attention to nutrition. We just want him to eat. If he eats cake and French fries, that is okay, mom. My husband grabs my hand because I think he was like, oh, she's going to lose it on this dude. Like, she's going to fly across the table.
Yeah.
He like grabbed my hand underneath the desk, like, just chill. Oh, like, it's gosh. Okay. And I was livid. And I think it was that moment that I also realized, like, okay, A, we're trapped. B, this is what they're telling everybody, and I'm educated. But what about mom here and a mom here who has no idea? They're just trusting the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're truly feeding their kids chocolate cake and French fries because
just
they won't
calories.
Eat. Just they're, calories. Yeah.
Wow.
Seed oils and sugar. And I mean.
And that's what they feed them in the hospitals too,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's horrible. And most hospital floors have a candy cart.
Oh my
and
gosh.
They have a volunteer who's a sweet person that just loves to serve these kids, and they push around and the kid gets to pick all the candy they want. So it's terrible. I mean, those are the things that were probably just the most horrifying and surprising.
Is that still happening now?
Mm-hmm. It's still happening.
Wow.
In fact, I have some oncologists. I had one that was so angry with me. And then I think that now it's okay. But he sent me an email and said, my patient was told that she only can eat organic meat, and so she won't eat when she's in the hospital. And I'm like, well, her mom's bringing her food, right? And, you know, I never heard a response. But no, doctors are given nutrition as an elective, and we found out now pediatric oncologists are no longer going to be able to be required to do any nutrition.
Wow. I would imagine there's like more and more pushback on that now.
I
Do you
hope.
Feel that way?
Oh my. I mean, even with just the new administration in the health movement, I'm praying. Like, I told my husband I need to get connected to the right people to know this is a problem. And I think pediatric cancer is still so rare in their eyes. There's 400,000 kids every year that get cancer. That's new cases. So it's not small. But it's still not really a priority. And I just think it's still foreign, right? Like, yeah. People just don't realize how many kids are getting cancer. And
it's one of the top killers of children, right?
Yeah, it is. And with the funding, this isn't the funding we want, but global funding for cancer, 4% goes to kids. 96% goes to adults. So there's so many broken pieces. And so, yeah, my hope is that I can have a voice with that movement specifically for pediatrics.
For anyone listening who may have a child that was just diagnosed with cancer, or maybe they were just diagnosed with cancer, what would your first recommendation be on where to begin?
The first thing I would say is to take a pause. They throw you into treatment, and very rarely, I won't say never, but very rarely is it an emergency. There are cases, of course, where it is an emergent situation and you need to have intervention right away.
But more often than not, that's not the case. Because I've heard of so many stories where, like, I think mostly with adults, where they're diagnosed and then they rush them into surgery like the following day.
And they are misdiagnosed. There's so many times that a certain leukemia is actually diagnosed as the wrong type of leukemia, and the treatment is totally different.
Yeah.
And so it is there's so many reasons to pause. Number one, to just recognize, like, this is heartbreaking. Like, there's so much grief that comes with this, and it's okay to sit in that and like surrender it, right? And just be okay sitting in that and recognizing the trauma that just happened. Sometimes we react out of trauma and we're just so quick to move. But that's number
one.
It's scary.
It's so scary. So you just want to like do something about it and fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to take action. Trusting the experts, trusting the doctor, thinking that they know what's best when that isn't necessarily always the case.
It isn't. And when we realize that cancer doesn't happen overnight, I mean, there are more and more studies that prove that cancer has been growing for years. And in the case of my son, it could have been growing in utero. Right? Like,
wow.
We are creating cancer cells in our body every single day with our immune system being turned on and healthy, and teaching our kids to do those detox methods we talked about and giving them healthy foods is giving them the opportunity for their immune system to shut the cancer cell off, right? So we're creating these cells all day. It's when our immune system isn't being supported that it can turn into a cancering process. So cancer takes a while to start. And so that's why we don't have to make a decision overnight. And so I would say in that pause, grieving, taking a moment, getting a support around you. Like, you need a team. Michael Jordan was really great because he had a really great team, but he also had Phil Jackson as his like coach, right? So we always say like, you need to not be the Michael Jordan. You need a Phil Jackson. You need somebody that comes in and he's like, okay, I'm going to help walk you through this. Like a doula,
yeah.
When you go in for a birth, like finding a team of, and maybe it's your chiropractor that you trust, that you love, that has more of a functional approach, that can kind of be that other ear or offer advice outside of the conventional space, and then getting a second and third opinion. And our experience, of course, we went and tried to get a second or third opinion, but didn't realize that the protocol is all the same. But getting a second opinion on the diagnosis is not a bad idea. Or having the results being shared with another physician doesn't mean you need to go through the biopsy again, but share those results with somebody else you trust or that comes recommended. So that'd be the first thing. And like I said, just finding your team. Like, who do you want to come alongside you to walk through this alongside your oncologist? Because your oncologist knows the somatic theory of cancer, which is just genetic, nothing about environment, nothing about the metabolic approach, the terrain, recognizing that cancer isn't a deficiency in chemo. And so you need to find somebody that can come alongside you that knows nutrition does play a role. Detox is important. And I would say if you are married and your child has cancer, like, remember that you and your spouse are on a team and prioritize that sacred relationship, because while there's going to be highs and lows, and like, my husband grieved differently than I did, and I wanted him to grieve like I did, you know, there's so much happening in emotion. And what we realized is God can use the heartache and the pain for such a powerful purpose. And I think a big part of that is through your marriage, like through the power of being united. You don't have to agree on everything through the process, but just remembering you're on the same team and your goal is to help your child heal. But staying committed to that, date nights, things that will continue to lift that marriage up. Like,
yeah, not neglecting that in the process.
No,
I'm
because
sure
it's
like the last thing that is on your mind, but yep. Probably so important to prioritize still.
Because you don't want to leave your kid when they're sick, but your child's going to heal in a home that feels healthy. Mm-hmm. And that comes from a marriage that's really healthy. You know, that sets the tone of a home. Like, mm-hmm. before you have somebody come in and fix the EMF and the RF and the mold and all of that, I'm always like, that's so important and that's a big thing. But like, how is your marriage? And I'm not saying to, you know, go to a marriage retreat in the middle of this, but really just being united and like this, we have a team effort here. We need to heal our kid and create a space that's comfortable for them to heal in.
That's good. One thing I love about you is how comprehensive you are in your approach to health and wellness. Like, it's not just food with you. It's not just lifestyle. It's not just EMFs. Like, you really factor everything in and you walk the walk in your life and in your family's life still. I would love for you to just walk us through like your daily routine, like every detail, what you do in the morning, what you do, you know, midday or to wind down at night. I want to see the picture of like a day in the life of Season.
I love that. Yes. It's like my, and I am so routine, by the way. So I will preface this by, it took me years to kind of get to the point where I have this much of a routine. And so if you're a mom and your kids are little and you're like sleep deprived, don't like try to, my current is not your starting point. Mm-hmm. Right. My son actually now, for my 14-year-old kicker, is like part, he does some of this routine as well, but I'll tell you what I do. So I get up usually around 5:30. The first thing I do is go down and take my Keton minerals. And right now we're on a kind of parasite mold detox, so I'm taking some of those supplements. And then I do my coffee enema. And while I'm doing my coffee enema...
You've been doing that for a long time, right? Every morning?
Almost. Wow. I mean, like, I'm traveling right now, so I'm not doing them. Yeah. But at home, yeah, I would say at least 5 mornings a week, if not all. It's a great... Nobody bothers you when you do it. Like,
no,
my husband
no
even started doing
around.
Them because he's like... Nobody's going to bother me if I can lock the door.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been doing those for a while, but I do my coffee enema. While I'm doing that, I'm using my red light just to help stimulate the mitochondria and anti-aging benefits. And then I go downstairs and I do my Bible reading. I just sit at the table and go through. Oh, actually what I've been doing lately is, I've never done this before. We always lived in the mountains. And so in the winter, it just wasn't comfortable. But when I'm reading my Bible, I'm standing outside in the grass and grounding, just kind of connecting my feet to the grass, doing my Bible study. And then I go for, it depends on how I'm feeling that morning. I'll go for a walk. Then we live by the beach right now, so that's really enjoyable. I just do like a 20-minute walk and come back and then work out, or I'll work out, then do my walk. If I'm not in the mood to work out, I'll just do a walk.
What do you do to work out?
I have like a fear of gyms. So like, I would walk into a gym and be like, I don't know what to do. Why is everybody around here? I don't want people looking at me. So much equipment. Yeah. I make ugly workout faces. I'm not like the cute Instagram. I'm like, who is this? Is she really working out? She looks so cute. I just do weights and like, I have an app. I've used the Peloton app actually. Their weight classes are awesome.
Really?
Yeah. They're like 20-30 minutes. So I just use an app that I'm loving and I do weights. I usually work out for about 20-30 minutes. I'll rebound as part of that. And then I don't eat. I've been intermittent fasting for years. What's interesting is, as I'm getting older, I'm 43, I'm starting to kind of change it up a little bit to see how my body responds to doing a little bit of food before my workout. I'll keep you posted because I just started that. But I usually don't eat till noon. But I'm drinking tons of water.
Yeah. Quick question on that. Yeah. What are your thoughts on fasting for cancer?
It is one of the most powerful things you can do. In fact, it's free. It's nature's operating table. With kids, it's tricky. You don't want to force them, right, to fast. They're so uncomfortable already, but forcing them to fast. But if they're old enough to understand the benefit and they're willing to, like, communicate with you about it, oh my gosh. Fasting around chemotherapy is phenomenal. Doing prolonged fasts, if you're monitored by a practitioner, incredible. Oh, if everybody could do a long fast while going through treatment, it would be amazing.
And good for prevention too, right?
Yes. Yeah, Josh and I started doing a 24-hour fast almost every week. If I'm on my cycle, I won't. So it's about 3 Mondays a month, we'll do a 24-hour fast. I did a 3-day water fast last month. It was actually way easier than I thought. It was not fun, but it was fine.
Yeah. I know. I think that's what a lot of people, like, it sounds intimidating to a lot of people, and I'm a fan of fasting as well.
Yeah.
I'm like, I haven't done much of it in a while. I just kind of like, now I take a really intuitive approach and kind of just go off of what I feel like my body needs at the time. but I've done up to 6 days, and I feel like the first few days are pretty hard for me, but then you just get this like amazing mental clarity.
Yeah.
And you just feel so good. Food doesn't even like sound that appealing anymore. And it's just the best reset.
When you did 6 days, did you do any coffee?
Yeah, I did.
You did. Okay.
I was doing coffee, tea, water.
Okay. Yeah, the 3 days, I feel like the first day was the hardest. Second day was not great. By the third day, I kind of toyed around with the idea of, should I do this one more day?
Yeah.
My husband, I talked to him.
Day four and five
were like easy.
The best. Yeah.
Okay.
And then six, I started to feel like a little bit weak. Because I was going to go seven when I did this. And I was feeling like I was just, it was time for like food again.
What did you introduce back in first?
I think bone broth was the first thing. This was a couple years ago. Bone broth. And I know people say like not to go all in with like
protein
steak
and
or
fat.
Protein. Yeah. But I think I did. I just like, once you start eating, the hunger kicks in.
Yeah.
And, but it was, I felt fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I did on the 3 day. I did broth and then I had eggs.
Yeah.
My husband just finished. He's not traveling with me right now, but he just said he was 3.5 days. I didn't even know he was fasting. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to eat still. I feel great.
Yeah.
It is so powerful. Like I always tell, like, I try to speak in kid language, but you think of all the bad guys being eaten up by the good guys when you're fasting. That's how I tell my kids, like, about supplements or whatever. Like, little Pac-Man going up, and they're destroying all the gunk and getting it out because they don't have to do anything else. Yes.
Kicks in, yeah.
It's so powerful, and you're not digesting. You're not having to, you know, your body can just get rid and, like, detox without you taking anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful. I love fasting.
The physician within. I think one of the philosophers from back in the day said that. Hippocrates.
Yes,
maybe.
It might have been Hippocrates. Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah.
I love fasting.
Okay, so back to your day. So at 12 o'clock typically is when you have your first meal.
And I usually I was on a berberine kick for a little bit, and I would take berberine supplement before my first meal.
And that helps to regulate blood sugar.
Yeah, so you don't have that, even though I'm not eating sugar with my breakfast, it just helps kind of that metabolism and processing of the nutrients and not having any type of spikes.
I've heard that referred to as nature's Ozempic.
Yes. And it has anti-cancer properties. Berberine is actually antifungal, antiviral, has anti-cancer properties. It's a really cool herb.
I haven't tried it.
Yeah.
Now I want to.
I think it's great. I think everybody should do it for a period of time. If people have really low blood sugar, then you want to be careful because it could actually just keep you too low. But if you have mostly regulated or high, yes, it's amazing. So I'll take berberine if I'm on a berberine kick. And then I eat, and I usually eat, I'm so routine. I eat 3 eggs cooked in butter, and I top it with the Pluck seasoning. And if I've had, I make these delicious ground chicken sausages with just maple syrup and onion and garlic, and they're really yummy. So if I have those made, I'll have those. Avocado, if I have my sourdough, I'll do avocado and sourdough. Microgreens. My kids eat the same thing. And then I have my coffee, which my new favorite thing, oh my gosh, is, and I have coffee after I eat, but I do think people are like, how do you wait that long? I think a coffee enema might help.
Yeah.
Because I don't get headaches. Even when I fasted for those 3 days, I didn't do coffee. I did my coffee enemas and I was fine.
I feel like it energizes you still, but in like a little bit of a different way.
Yeah.
It's like more subtle.
Much more subtle. You don't get like feel a buzz or anything. But I make my coffee and I add a homemade marshmallow to it.
Mm.
And it's so good.
I was on a kick with that recently.
Oh, it's hard to get off that kick.
Yeah.
Like, no coffee tastes as good. Yeah. Like, what is life without
coffee.
It?
I don't know why more people don't do that.
I know. And then you just blend it in. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And then I jump into my work day and I work, and we usually go on, my husband and I, or if he's not around or he's busy, I'll do an evening walk and then we have dinner. And our dinners are pretty, living in Mexico, we've kind of sourced healthy foods, but it's limited. So we have like an organic ranch we get food from, some produce, but it's just not quite as diverse as being here, you know.
You don't have all the same options.
Right.
I feel like I wouldn't mind that. I can eat the same thing over and over.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I have seasons of wanting to be creative in the kitchen, and you don't really get that there. Because it's always the same season. It's always hot, yeah. You know? But yeah, then we eat dinner as a family. Usually my kids are getting older. So you're starting to see that kind of, they're doing their things at different times. I'm in bed by, my favorite day is being in bed by 9. And I have a journal next to my bed and I'll write out, for the next day, the 3 things I want to accomplish the next day. And then the 3 things that I'm proud of that day. And it's just helpful. Like, it's helpful for, as an entrepreneur and being in service all of the time, of like recognizing where I was happy I showed up and what I need to do the next day. And yeah, that's
sounds
kind
so
of a
dreamy.
Day in the life. Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, minus, you know, yelling at the kids here and
yeah, all those little things.
Yeah.
What are all of the things that you are doing now? Tell our audience about the programs that you have and just everything that you do to support families that are walking through cancer and just people in general.
Yeah. So we have a nonprofit that we founded actually back in 2014, right after Kicker was diagnosed, called Kit Cancer. And through our nonprofit, we send out kits, which you guys donate so generously and have since we started, which is amazing. These kits are, we call it a Kickstart kit. So the family, when their child's diagnosed, they receive it for free. And it has like the things that we really want them to kickstart their health journey and to recognize, like, please use clean deodorant. And so we include the Primally Pure deodorant. Use castor oil. So we put castor oil in there, detox bath supplies in there. We have some supplements in there. Just Thrive, the probiotic company, is donating now some supplements. Some healthy nut butter packets, organic snacks. Paleo Valley donates their beef sticks. And so the idea is like, give this to a family to help kind of inspire their journey on healing. And then we have an athlete program through Kit Cancer where we sponsor athletes of child that had or has cancer and just keep them like striving for something, keep them living for something. And in addition to our nonprofit, I have programs called, one is Thrive Through Cancer Formula, and that's where I work closely with families alongside my brother-in-law, Dr. Charles Pennick, who's an MD. And we support families while they're walking through cancer, live support Zooms where they get to ask their questions. They get access to a beautiful community that they never knew they needed or never wanted to be a part of, right?
Yeah.
But knowing they're not alone. And then I have a remission program. And so that's Thrive Beyond Cancer Formula. And it's once the child's done with treatment, they're in remission, we get to dive deep into diagnostic testing. That's where we do parasite cleansing and heavy metal detoxing and all the things that are safe to do after treatment. And in addition to that, I'm working on some other fun projects that still I have a little bit more work to do. But I have a podcast, I have a website, just a lot of free information, honestly, on my Instagram to offer, yeah, just overall healthy living. And my goal is that people will understand that it's so simple to create an environment that cancer can't survive in, you know, and it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need all the gadgets. Little organ meat and some berries and you're good to go.
Yeah. A little bit goes a long way.
It does.
You are such an amazing resource for families and individuals who are walking through cancer. And it's really cool to see how God has taken a really tragic and hard situation and just like allowed you to serve and help so many people now through that. Where's the best place for people to follow along with you and find you and connect with you?
Yeah, I would say my website is seasonjohnson.com, pretty easy. And then my Instagram, I share a lot on there.
Season is a really good follow on Instagram.
Thank you.
So much helpful information and so approachable. Great person to follow.
It's fun. I like Instagram. I run it. No, like if you get a response, it's me. It's just a fun way to connect. Like, of course, it comes with its negatives, right? The occasional weird person that drops in and says hilarious things, but it's a wonderful space to connect. And that's how I meet a lot of my families. Somebody will tag them in a post and then they'll drop into my DMs. And so, yeah, I would say my website and Instagram are probably the best place to start.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. It's awesome.